This is Toby Sumter with your Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. Today you'll hear about who is going to the Major League Baseball World Series, an update on Hunter Biden's laptop, the response to the Great Barrington Declaration on the COVID, White House scientist gets banned on Twitter, and 350 restaurants in New York City sue Cuomo and de Blasio. Remember, if you come across a news story you think we might need to cover, please send it to news@crosspolitic.com. This is a great way to share articles and stories with us that may end up in our daily or weekly shows, news@crosspolitic.com. The Dodgers claim the National League pennant and head to the World Series.
Towering fly ball. The Dodgers come from behind in the series. They come from behind in Game 7, and they win the National League pennant.
And the Dodgers advance to the World Series for the third time in the past 4 years. The team with the best record in baseball all year long, 43-17, in first place since the 13th of August, are the champions of the National League.
The Dodgers face off against the Tampa Bay Rays tonight, Tuesday, for Game 1 of the World Series. The Dodgers seek their first title since 1988 with Oral Hershiser, while the Rays are looking for their first ever world title. Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe said Monday there was no evidence that Hunter Biden's laptop was dropped off for repairs by Russian intelligence.
Tell us what's real and what's fake. Is this Russian disinformation, Director?
So, Maria, it's funny that some of the people that complain the most about intelligence being politicized are the ones politicizing intelligence. And unfortunately, in this case, it is Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who, as you pointed out on Friday, said that the intelligence community believes that Hunter Biden's laptop and the emails on it are part of some Russian disinformation campaign. Let me be clear, the intelligence community doesn't believe that because there's no intelligence that supports that. And we have shared no intelligence with Chairman Schiff or any other member of Congress that Hunter Biden's laptop is part of some Russian disinformation campaign. It's simply not true. And this is exactly what I said I would stop when I became the director of national intelligence, and that's people using the intelligence community to leverage some political narrative. And in this case, apparently Chairman Schiff wants anything against his preferred political candidate to be deemed as not real and is using the intelligence community or attempting to use the intelligence community to say there's nothing to see here. Don't drag the intelligence community into this. Hunter Biden's laptop is not part of some Russian disinformation campaign, and I think it's clear that the American people know that.
I just think that's pretty funny. Anyway, Sanders and Hillary, supporting leftists, comes out in defense of the Great Barrington Declaration. So this is Jeanine Yunes writing at the American Institute for Economic Research. She says, the Great Barrington Declaration signed last weekend has unleashed a torrent of criticism. We're shocked. This was to be expected since it conflicts with the public health prescription that has attained a religious-like status in many circles. Lockdowns and social distancing must be enforced in order to not be excommunicated and in order to stop the transmission of the coronavirus. The authors of the declaration, three of the world's most renowned epidemiologists, urge an entirely different approach. Those not vulnerable to severe illness and death from the virus, especially children and younger adults, should live as they did pre-March 2020. Doing so will, within a couple of months, generate herd immunity, allowing communities to return to relative normalcy. The overwhelming majority of condemnation that the declaration has received does not bear on the substance of its recommendations. Instead, critics accuse the primary signatories of having a subversive right-wing economic agenda, particularly since the declaration was created and signed at the American Institute for Economic Research, a think tank that pushes evidence-based economics and functioning markets. Now, as someone, and this again is Jeanine Yunes, as someone who was present for the weekend and made a small contribution to this effort, I can attest to right-wing ideology having played no part in formulation of the treatise or the scientists' motivations for participating. The disastrous economic effects of the lockdowns, the inherent violations of human rights that they entail, have brought together people from different ends of the political spectrum. Shock, she writes. I am a left-leaning New York City public defender who voted for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primaries and Hillary Clinton in the general election. I have never voted for a Republican candidate. I chose my career because I wanted to help those most defenseless in our society, indigent people accused and convicted of crimes and facing the awesome power of the state. Until I saw the catastrophic effects that the lockdowns were having on the very people I sought to help, I had never been associated or affiliated with any free market or right-wing institutions. Patui, she almost spit right there. But she didn't. She says, I'm not alone in this, having spoken with the three scientists, Jay Bhattacharya, who was on Across Politics, by the way, Sunetra Gupta, and Martin Kulldorff. On numerous occasions over the course of the weekend, I can say with certainty that neither politics nor free market ideology have anything to do with their decision to write the declaration. They're motivated solely by a concern for public health and distress at what lockdowns and various other social distancing policies are doing to human beings. In my experience over the past few months, that and nothing else is the common thread uniting anti-lockdowners. I like that. We're anti-lockdowners. Ironically, it is the declaration's most prominent critics, rather than its authors, who are politically motivated. Not least among them is Greg Gonsalves, a Yale epidemiologist who has emerged as one of the most vocal and qualified detractors of the declaration, who has offered this as his great detraction, his great critique, dubbing the statement the Great Barrington Declaration. He says, quote, is bullshit and bad science. Well, that's really helpful. That's really deep and really helps us, you know, grapple with your concerns with the declaration. As of Monday, October 19th, the statement now has the signatures of nearly 10,000 epidemiologists and other medical and public health scientists, nearly 30,000 medical practitioners, and almost 550,000 concerned citizens. Just a reminder that all the talks from this year's Fight Laugh Feast conference, Weapons for This War, are up in the club member portal. If you're not a club member yet, what are you waiting for? Go to fightlaughfeast.com, become a club member today, and get access to all the talks. Doug Wilson, George Grant, David Bonson, Jeff Durbin, Glenn Sunshine, and more. Also, if you want to rock your Fight Laugh Feast bona fides, visit rowdychristian.com for shirts and hats and hoodies and beanies. And of course, that famous post-mill coffee. From several listeners in our news inbox, San Diego United School District goes full racist. Students will no longer be graded based on a yearly average. They will now be graded on the color of their skin. Okay, well, not quite. But it will have nothing to do with, you know, their averages, how late they turn their assignments in. Those are just some of the major grading changes approved this week by California's second largest school district from, this is NBC 7 of San Diego. The San Diego Unified School District is overhauling the way it grades students. Board members say the changes are part of a larger effort to combat, you guessed it, racism. This is part of our honest reckoning as a school district. Yes, it's always very, very honest. As Vice President Richard Barrera, if we're actually going to be an anti-racist school district, we have to basically judge people by the color of their skin. Now, that's not what he said, but it's what they're doing. We have to confront practices like this that have gone on for years and years. Practices like what? Like evaluating people's work for what it is? The news story breathlessly reports that during the first semester of last year, 30% of all D or F grades were given to English learners. People who didn't know English very well, who were learning the English language. They got the most D's and F's. 1 in 4, 25% of failing marks were given to students with disabilities. Then, here, get ready to be shocked. 23% went to Native Americans, 23% went to Hispanics, 20% of D or F grades went to black students. And by comparison, 7% of failing marks went to white students. NBC 7 reports.
It's not fair. It should never have been that way, but it persists.
San Diego Unified School Board Vice President Richard Barrera says now grades will no longer represent a yearly average. Instead, they'll focus on whether a student ultimately masters the material. Also, teachers can no longer consider non-course material factors, like turning assignments in on time and classroom behavior, into a student's academic grade.
I think this reflects, you know, a reality that our students have described to us, and it's a change that's a long time in coming.
Of course, in order for the statistics cited to matter to anyone, you have to first believe that the color of your skin defines who you are. Of course, you know, the first two actually, you know, sort of make sense. If you're disabled and you're trying to learn English, you don't know the subjects you're learning, or you have inherent difficulties in learning the subjects. But then to pile in skin color or nation of origin or ethnicity in with those things is basically racist. Are there any other factors at all besides color of skin that could go into these grades? What if we ran the numbers differently related to broken homes, divorce, fatherlessness, criminality in the home, drug abuse, substance abuse? I don't know. Any number of other things. Would there be any other patterns there? In other words, San Diego and the rest of the woke culture is quickly descending into the racist pit it has dug for itself. In other news, NBC7 also reported that people who are slower runners have not won as many races as people who run faster. And this is shameful. The number of slow runners who have not won races is astonishing and mind-blowing, and the San Diego Unified School District is ashamed of itself and is currently sitting in a pile of ashes in the city square, and will be voting unanimously next month to end this injustice. Judging winners by who crosses the finish line first is clearly a vestige of white supremacy. May or may not have made all of that up. Also, the representatives from Southern Seminary are reportedly inviting the San Diego School District over to the seminary in Louisville for some advice on how to use those analytic tools. White House scientist gets banned on Twitter. Social media company Twitter finished its week of censorship on its platform by banning tweets regarding the efficacy of masks from Dr. Scott Atlas, a member of the White House scientific team battling the coronavirus. Atlas, senior fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institute, not only had his tweets removed, he was banned from tweeting until he deleted the tweets that Twitter had unclear reasons, objected to. Dr. Atlas had tweeted on Saturday, October 17th, masks work? No. LA, Miami, Hawaii, Alabama, France, Philippines, UK, Spain, Israel, WHO, that's the World Health Organization, widespread use not supported, plus many harms, ... Dr. Atlas retweeted his own tweet with additional comments 2 hours later, writing, quote, "That means the right policy is, at real Donald Trump guideline, use masks for their intended purpose when close to others, especially high risk, otherwise social distance, no widespread mandates, # common sense." Yeah, that'll get you banned, # common sense. In an email to the Federalist, Atlas outlined the evidence behind his tweet, citing a number of scientific studies, the World Health Organization, the CDC, as well as the numerous cities and nations that have had strict mask mandates in place where cases of COVID-19 have exploded. Almost, I don't know, suggesting that they don't work. This comes the same week that Twitter blocked New York Post articles alleging improprieties involving presidential candidate Joe Biden and his son Hunter and his laptop. The Ukrainian energy company Burisma, revealed by a laptop now held by the FBI. For good measure, Twitter also banned the New York Post's official Twitter account from the platform. Twitter just out banning. Like, they're like the total, I mean, they are high priests. They're just excommunicating everyone. Ban, which Twitter claims to be a neutral platform and, of course, enjoys legal protection. Like a phone company, for example. It can't be sued, held liable for what people say on it. But if it's actually doing editing, then it's acting more like a publisher, like a newspaper, and it ought to be liable for the information or disinformation it's allowing on its platform. Remember, Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act currently gives Twitter special protection to engage in censorship. But after this week of obviously political motivated silencing, this is from an article in the Federalists, many in Congress are looking to strip the company of that protection. Yes, strip them. Good article at American Greatness on disinformation. Speaking of disinformation, speaking of censorship, there's a relatively short article over at AmericanGreatness.com, AmGreatness.com, it's called "The Establishment Disinformation is Killing Western Democracy." It's what it's about. It traces the establishment media narratives from the weapons of mass destruction narrative, and the war in the Middle East, to Russian collusion, to the COVID crazy, pointing out that once an orthodoxy has been established, usually on the left, all dissenting voices are silenced. Hey, we've unveiled the brand new Fight Laugh Feast magazine at our recent conference. It's going to be a quarterly issue, order a yearly subscription for yourself, send a couple of yearly subscriptions to your friends who have been, that need help. Every quarter, we promise quality food for the soul, wine for the heart, some Red Bull for turning over tables. Our magazine will include cultural commentary, a psalm of the quarter, recipes for feasting, and laughter to make your sides hurt. Annual subscriptions are $40. That's for 4 issues. Sign up at flfnetwork.com. Click product, then find the magazine. Sign up. The Wall Street Journal reports the U.S. budget deficit tripled in 2020. In the fiscal year that ended September 30th, rising to a record level of $3.1 trillion, that's about 16% of the total budget, the largest percentage since 1945. Federal debt totaled 102% of gross domestic product this year, the first time it has exceeded the size of the economy for the full fiscal year in more than 70 years. The news has Senate Republicans not sure about the White House proposal for another $1.88 trillion COVID bailout. New York City restaurants sue Cuomo and de Blasio for $2 billion over indoor dining ban. Daniel Cassidy writes at Forbes, restaurants in New York City filed a $2 billion class action lawsuit against the city and state officials last Thursday, alleging the indoor dining ban caused irreparable harm to the city's food and beverage industry and pushing for the return to indoor dining. The lawsuit marks the latest attempt to normalize the city through legal action. Il Bacio, an Italian restaurant in Queens, I probably said it wrong, is spearheading a class action lawsuit against Governor Andrew Cuomo, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, and New York Attorneys General to force the state to allow indoor dining and for damages lost during COVID-19 guidelines. Over 350 restaurants have signed on to the $2 billion lawsuit. Il Bacio is only 500 feet from the Nassau County border, where restaurants have been able to serve indoors at 50% capacity since June 24th. Oh yeah, that'll do it to you. New York City is the only city in the state where some form of indoor dining is still not allowed, despite a weeks-long statewide case positive rate below 1%. I mean, hasn't everybody had it now? In mid-August, 1,500 gym owners across New York filed a class action lawsuit against the state, which led to gyms, fitness centers, and yoga studios opening their doors at 33% capacity just a few weeks later. In May, a Brooklyn nursing student who had been arrested twice for violating the state's ban on non-essential gatherings while protesting outside City Hall in New York City filed a federal lawsuit against Cuomo alleging the ban violated her First Amendment rights, which led to the governor lifting the ban on protests and easing the guidelines on non-essential gatherings just in time for Memorial Day. New Jersey czar Phil Murphy condescended to the requests of the peons of his state by graciously allowing restaurants to open at 25% capacity just on Monday. Apparently, all the peons scraped and bowed before His Majesty and blessed the name of Phil Murphy 3 times, for his loving kindness endures forever. But the citizens and restaurant owners of New York City are only gnashing their teeth. Of course, this could all be over in a minute if all the people of New York and New Jersey and everywhere else simply opened their restaurants and went back to normal life. There's nothing the authorities could do if everyone did it. But that would take courage. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. Remember to send us stories and articles that you think we should cover at news.crosspolitic.com. You can find this on all our shows at crosspolitic.com or on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search Fight, Laugh, Feast. Support Rowdy Christian Media. Become a Fight, Laugh, Feast club member. It warms my heart, and you'll get a free t-shirt when you do. Go to fightlaughfeast.com. Have a great day.